It's because that's what life is. And at that moment, that's what we knew. That's all we had. That was our journey of the process of life itself. Does this make sense? So our response to our past mistakes must be twofold. Number one, we need to learn from them. The most important lessons I've ever learned were out of my mistakes in life. And number two is we need to let them go. And one is as important as the other. We need to learn from them to grow. Now hang on. We need to learn from them to grow. We need to let them go so we can continue our journey. So many people, they stop their journey at the depot of regret. And they never continue. They never press on. They never reach their level, only because they keep saying, but I want to go back when we can't, okay? One of my favorite poems that I memorized many, many, many years ago. Though we cannot go back and make a brand new start, my friend, anyone can start from now and make a brand new end. The second R, let's talk about. The second R is resentment. And the chip on your shoulder can become a very heavy load. In fact, somebody told me one time, I said, you know why people have a chip on their shoulder, don't you? And I said, no. I said, well, it's an indication of wood higher up. And in your notes, do you know the hallmark of a second rater? It's the resentment of another person's achievement. Let me read you a Greek legend. This tells the story of a certain athlete who ran well but placed only second in the Olympic race. The crowd applauded the winner and eventually a statue was erected in his honor. And meanwhile, the one who had placed second came to think of himself as a loser. Envy ate away at him, filling his body with stress. He could think of nothing else but his defeat and his lust to be number one. So he decided to destroy the statue that daily reminded him of his lost race. Cautiously, he began to implement his plan. Late each night, he went to the statue and chiseled at the base to weaken the foundation. One night, however, as he chiseled in violent and envious anger, he went too far. The heavy marble statue teetered on the fragile base and crashed down on this disgruntled athlete. He died beneath the crushing weight of the marble replica of the one he had grown to hate. But in reality, had been dying a long time before, inch by inch, chisel blow by chisel. One of the most important lessons I ever taught my congregation in San Diego was that it is not what happens to me that is near as important as what happens in me. You do not have power to stop the negative stuff that can happen to you. We do not have within our own ability to form life in such a way that everything in life treats us very kindly and very fairly. So what I learned was that I had to take control of what I could control. And what I can't control is other people and other situations. What I can control is me. So I can't always control what you will do to me, but I can control how I'll respond to what you do to me. I can't always control how you'll think about a difficult situation, but I can control how I will think about you in that difficult situation. And the moment that I understood that I held within myself the power to control the inside issues, and I want to say something, the inside issues are the important issues of life. Out of it come the essence of life. In fact, that's why when it comes to this area of resentment, that's why Shakespeare called resentment what he called it the green sickness. Bacon admitted that it had no holidays. Ho-ho. Horace declared that tyrants never invented a greater torment. And Barry said that it is the most corroding of all vices. And Sheridan referred to it in his play, The Critic, when he wrote, "There is not a passion so strongly rooted in the human heart as this." And Philip Bailey, the eloquent English poet of yesteryear, vividly described it as a coal that that comes hissing hot from hell. This whole issue of resentment. Heard a cute story the other day about two shopkeepers who lived, or they had their shops right across from each other on the same street. And they both were filled with resentment and envy of the other guy. In fact, if a customer went in the guy's store across the street and bought something, the owner would kind of walk out with him and then stand in front of the door and nod to the other guy and, you know, I got one. And so they were playing this game. And so one night a genie appeared to one of the shopkeepers and said that in a dream, said, I will give you anything you wish, but I want you to understand, whatever I give you, the guy across the street, I will give twice as much. So if you ask for money, I'll give you money. I'll make you wealthy, but I'll make him very wealthy. If you ask for a lot of customers, I'll give you a lot of customers, but I'll give him many more customers. So I want you to understand, whatever you ask for, you only get one request, but whatever you ask for, I'm going to give him double the amount of what you get. So, man, you know, the guy's in turmoil. He wants to have all this stuff. And then he says, oh, but the other guy's going to get more. I mean, then all of a sudden he thought for a moment. He said, oh, okay, I'll tell you what I want you to do. He said, strike me blind in one eye. Of course, the other guy would get struck blind in two eyes. Envy, resentment, jealousy, bitterness. Whoa. Let me give you some things resentment does. Number one, resentment hurts us more than it hurts others. One night on the Tonight Show, Buddy Hackett was on the Tonight Show, and he said these words. He said, if I've had arguments with people, he said, I never carry a grudge. And he said, the reason I don't carry a grudge is while I'm resenting and carrying a grudge, they're out dancing. And that's so true. And it just hurts ourselves more than any others. It's the old Amos and Andy routine where I love it, where Amos, he gets tired of Andy smacking him on the chest. And so he goes to his buddy Keenfish and he opens up his suit coat and he says, and he has sticks of dynamite all across his chest. And, you know, he fastens it back up and he says, you know how I hate it when he smacks me on the chest. So the next time he smacks me on the chest, he's going to blow his hand off. Hurts us more than hurts others. Number two, it causes us to focus on the wrong things. It presents a lot of wasted energy, which is number three. It drains us of needed energy. So how do we remove resentment from our life or from the life of someone else? How do we remove resentment? Number one, admit the problem. If you've got that problem in your life, admit it. Number two, add value to those above and below you. One of the greatest ways to overcome resentment is to begin to add value to other people, especially the people that you perhaps are jealous of or resent. If you add value to those above you, that'll take care of the resentment problem. If you add value to those below you, it'll take care of the pride problem. Number three, appreciate your gifts and uniqueness. Appreciate the very fact that you are an original copy and you're not supposed to be like someone else and they're not supposed to be like you, and what is success to them may not be success to you. Number four, accept your limitations. Accept the very fact that there are certain things in life that you or I will not be able to do. And number four, ask a friend to help you. Because if you could ask a friend around you to help you, it's awesome. The added value that'll give you. Okay. Now, I've gotten through the first two R's because I didn't really want to be counselor psychologist, so that I could get to the third R, which is resistance. If you're a parent of any teenager, you understand resistance. Okay? I mean, there's no such thing as a teenager that is born to be compliant. For you that have teenagers or you got kids that are going to become teenagers, my prayers are with you. Now, don't despise those years. Some of the teenagers are just, you know, you go from wonderful to awful. What I found about teenage years is there's no middle ground. It's either the best thing happening or else you're saying, dear God, take my kids now. So if you've ever dealt with teenagers, you understand resistance. If you've ever been a leader, you understand resistance. Isn't that true? I mean, it's the first person that always gets shot at. It's the person that's out. I mean, it's a, what is it? When the geese fly together, it's the leading head goose that gets all the turbulence and gets all the wind. The leader is always the one who takes the flak. So anybody in a leadership position understands very quickly what I call resistance. So let's see if we cannot talk about it. I read a bumper sticker lately that said, "When the going gets tough, it's time to take a nap." Or I read another one that said, "If at first you don't succeed, do it the way your wife told you to." In my book, Developing a Leader Within You, I talk about creating positive change. I call it the acid test of a leader. What I'm saying is, anyone can, when you talk about momentum, anyone, once an organization has momentum, anyone can get out in front and enjoy the thrust that momentum gives an organization. But what happens when the organization's going the wrong way? So you have to stop that negative momentum. Then you have to build momentum and turn it around and get it going. And now we're talking about a whole different deal, okay? So how do you handle resistance? This will be the practical part of this lesson. Number one, expect resistance. Let's all start there. Let's all understand we're going to have problems, we're going to have resistance. In fact, motion causes friction. So whenever you move, you're going to have some friction. It's the old law of navigation in my 21 Laws book. This is anyone can steer a ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. Now let me help you with this. Let me tell you a story. When I was 25, I went to my second congregation in Lancaster, Ohio, and I was over my head. The church was, I was running maybe 500. And I immediately knew that I was going to have resistance. In fact, 2 weeks before I became the official pastor of the church, the congregation had a congregational meeting that lasted 4 hours on voting on building an activity building for the youth. And I sat in the balcony that night. They didn't even know I was there because I wasn't leading. But I sat in the balcony. I watched them get into a fight, which almost split the church that night. I mean, they did everything but have a knockdown drag-on. I thought, this is going to be a joy. In 2 weeks, I get these people. And much animosity, put that in your, that's the first picture I want you to get. The second picture I want you to get is the person that was my lay leader in the congregation, as far as lay people are concerned, was very negative to any pastor and basically considered it his cause to fight whoever the pastor was. Are you getting the picture? I've got a divided congregation. I've got a lay leader who basically thinks it's his job to fight whoever the pastor is. Now you put both of us, and get the picture here. The third thing I have is I realize I don't want them to build the activity building, not because I'm opposed to the activity building, but I plan on building this church, growing this church, and I know I'm going to need a sanctuary where they're going to build the activity building. So I've already drawn out really what I expect the campus to look like about 10 years from now, of which I've never had the privilege, of course, to share that vision with them because I'm not alone, not the pastor, and besides, if I did share the vision, they'd all get mad at me. So here I am, I'm a 25-year-old kid, and so I get there, and after a year, this church is starting to take off pretty good. And I know now I've got to chart the course. Remember, I've got to chart the course for the next 3 years to build a multi-million-dollar building program, of which I've never built multi-million-dollar buildings. So I'm in deep weeds. I'm way over my head. I know that I'm over my head. God knows I'm over my head. God's kind of sweating it himself. Oh, you know, I said, boy, I got John down there. Well, this is going to be tough. Okay, got the picture. So one day I sat down. I can still remember doing this in my office on a legal pad. I sat down and I said, okay, John, you have to process this congregation from where they are to where they need to be. And I did an acrostic on Plan Ahead that I have used for over 20 years. Now, in resistance, how you reduce resistance is by coming up with answers that people have not figured out. Leaders have to see farther than people. They have to see more than people. Okay, now, so let me give you this acrostic, because I want to tell you this. You're going to use this the rest of your life. I promise you. This is one of those things. This is going to be worth your whole day right here. The letter P, let's start there, stands for predetermine your course of action. What you do is you have to sit down and basically say, where do I want to end up? So out there somewhere, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, you say, this is what I want my life to look like there. Okay, predetermine your course of action. The letter L stands for lay out your goals. After you predetermine where you want to go, you begin to lay out your goals. And by the way, your goals are stepping stones to get to that predetermined course of action, what you want to accomplish. The letter A stands for adjust your priorities. The moment that you begin to lay out your goals, you're going to find out that there's a lot of things you're spending money on, time on, effort on that you need to get rid of for you to be able to accomplish the objective that you have. So you adjust your priorities. The letter N stands for notify key personnel. Now you begin to bring the key players around. You begin to share with them your dream, and you begin to let them add value to that dream. You even let them, they begin to tweak the dream so that it becomes, they begin to have ownership of it. The letter A in the word ahead stands for allow time for acceptance. Any new thought needs time for people to have incubation and be able to accept what you're giving them. So you allow time for acceptance. The letter H stands for head into action.